of the week. The warm air flowing over the snow cover is resulting in dense fog that will persist into Friday morning. Low clouds and drizzle are also expected before we've seen rain and the possibility of thunderstorms Friday and Friday night. A cold front will move into the region Friday night and Saturday. A dense fog advisory is in effect for most of the WILL severe weather coverage area until 9 a.m. Central Time tomorrow morning. In the WILL severe weather coverage area, these counties are included in the dense fog advisory. Champaign, Coles, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Macon, McLean, Moultrie, Piatt, and Vermilion. A dense fog advisory means visibilities will frequently be reduced to less than 1/4 mile. And, of course, the fog will make for hazardous driving conditions. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, cloudy with fog. There's a slight chance of light rain and light freezing rain late this afternoon. The high 35 with a south wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, rain and freezing rain are likely this evening. There will be areas of dense fog. The temperature will hold steady around 32. The wind will be out of the southeast at 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, cloudy with areas of drizzle and dense fog, the high 42 with a south wind at 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, Thursday night, cloudy with a chance of showers and areas of fog. The temperature holding steady at 40 degrees and a south wind at 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Friday, patchy fog. Showers are likely and there's a chance of thunderstorms. The high 55, the wind from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Friday night, colder. Showers are likely in the evening and again there's a chance for thunderstorms. After midnight, there's a chance for rain or snow, the low around 30. New Year's Day, much colder, partly sunny, the high in the low 30s. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low in the upper teens. Sunday, partly cloudy with a high in the low 30s. At noon Central Time, temperatures ranged from the upper 20s to the upper 30s across Illinois and Indiana. At Rockford, it was 29. In Chicago and Bloomington, normal 30. Danville reported 31 degrees, Effingham 35, and Carbondale 39. In South Bend, it was 34. Lafayette, Indianapolis, and Evansville all reported 36 degrees, 35 at Terre Haute. At noon, it was 33 degrees at Willard Airport, the dew point 32, the wind out of the southeast at 13, giving us a wind chill index of 24, the relative humidity 96%, the barometric pressure 29.95 and falling, and the visibility was reported at 1/4 mile at noon Central Time. At 12:40, 34 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, and it's foggy. In 2010, scientists found more than 100 new planets, more than ever before. A few of these planets look enticingly like our own cozy Earth. NPR's Dan Charles has more.
20 years ago, nobody knew if there were planets outside our solar system. Today, we have a list of more than 500 such exoplanets. This past year, researchers announced they'd found whole solar systems with 3, 5, or maybe even 7 planets. 2010 also brought us the first discoveries from NASA's official planet-hunting instrument, a telescope in space called Kepler. The Kepler team has announced just a handful of new planets so far, but there are hints of hundreds more. But don't try to tell Mark Kushner that discovering planets has now become routine. Kushner is an astrophysicist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center.
You could say giving birth to babies is routine, right? In the sense that it happens all the time. But if you're the person who found the planet, it's not routine for you. It's still, you know, my heart skips a beat every time I hear about one of these things.
Because finding a new planet still feels like science fiction becoming fact. Those distant balls of gas or water or rock represent the possibility of other worlds, other civilizations. And this year, for the first time, scientists say they've found a planet just far enough from its star that liquid water could exist there.
Finding a planet like ours is exactly what got me into this game. I don't just want to find a planet like ours. I want to know the answer to the question, are we alone?
Now, don't expect an answer to that question anytime soon. Most of these planets still are invisible. We only know they exist because they change the light from their stars in subtle ways. For instance, if the light from any star dims slightly in a regular pattern every few days or years, it's a signal that a planet is orbiting that star, blocking a bit of the light every time it passes. Astronomers can then calculate how big the planets are and how far they are from their star. Also, when the planet comes between its star and us, a tiny fraction of the star's light passes through the planet's atmosphere, like a sunrise or sunset around the edge of the planet.
And that light, we can analyze and we can use it to tell us about the chemistry of the atmosphere.
Is there oxygen there? Methane? Ammonia?
That is a whole new era in planet science.
Alicia Weinberger is an astrophysicist at the Carnegie Institution of Washington.
There's been just a tremendous number of papers that have come out in the last year and even before that on trying to characterize what planets are really made out of.
Also, it is now possible to see a few distant planets directly. Astronomers can create a kind of artificial eclipse of a star inside a telescope, and then sometimes planets come into view, faint dots moving around the star. What all these techniques reveal is a shocking amount of planetary diversity. Again, NASA astrophysicist Mark Kushner.
There are planets that are similar to things that we have in the solar system. There are planets that are so different we didn't dream of them. I mean, we literally just didn't think of them, that there could be such crazy things out there.
A planet turned up recently with an atmosphere rich in carbon. On a planet like that, diamond might be as common as rocks are here. Astronomers used to think that planetary systems had a natural order, with small planets like Earth close to the star and stately gas giants like Jupiter far away. But then they found lots of huge planets right next to their stars, zipping around in superfast orbits.
So that is still a real puzzle.
And Alicia Weinberger says figuring out how such planets formed is just the kind of puzzle that scientists love.
You know, fields in which there's nothing left to figure out are really no fun at all. And I think the exoplanet field has been attracting lots of really bright young people because there are these really interesting problems to solve.
They're also looking forward to using a powerful new tool. NASA is building a big new space telescope, 100 times more powerful than the famous Hubble Space Telescope. Astronomers get a kind of dreamy look in their eyes just talking about it. So for them, it was probably the worst news of 2010 when NASA announced in the fall that its Dreamboat telescope was going to cost $1.5 billion more than expected. The agency has not said how it will cover the cost overrun or whether it still hopes to launch the telescope within 5 years. Dan Charles, NPR News, Washington.
As a new year approaches, you may be contemplating a resolution or two. Perhaps you'd like to take up yoga. Commentator Sandeep Roy will not be joining you.
True confession. I am an Indian who doesn't do yoga. I wouldn't know a downward dog if it bit me. But because I'm Indian, people don't even ask if I know yoga. They ask, what kind of yoga did you grow up with? Iyengar, Ashtanga, Bikram? Actually, most Indians I know don't do yoga either. My friend Rajasvini Bhansali is an exception, and she's often the only Indian in class.
The instructor pointed to me in the middle of the class and talked about how Indians are better oriented towards doing squats. And I realized he was holding me up as an example of how us primitive people are just better squatters and therefore have looser hips.
I always thought I wasn't thick-skinned enough to survive yoga class. Then I heard the Hindu American Foundation had launched a campaign to take back yoga and reclaim its Hindu roots. I was alarmed. What if they really took it back and I wasn't ready? I decided to fix my yoga deficit disorder. So I show up at my first yoga class in San Francisco. It's steamy hot. There are over 100 people. And sure enough, my friends and I are the only 4 Indians. The instructor is from Tennessee, blonde, shirtless, and a bit of a yoga rock star. There are disco balls on the ceiling and huge posters of Krishna on the wall. I am just amazed at all the stuff. Yoga tops, bottoms, blankets, mats. My vision of a yogi was a guy in the forest sitting on a piece of tree bark, or in the deluxe version, a deer skin. He didn't have a yoga mat carrier. I survived the yoga class without embarrassing 5,000 years of Indian culture. It doesn't feel very Indian. My friend Naveen Chandra calls it bionic disco yoga. But he thinks yoga's Hindu roots are still there.
The vast majority of yoga teachers have studied Hinduism more than I have, or my parents have. And I'm learning more about the meanings of the shlokas and the intention of Hinduism than I ever knew as a kid growing up being taught Hinduism from my community.
Even back in India, yoga has not been such a big deal. Kate Churchill, director of the documentary Enlighten Up, interviewed yoga pioneer Pattabhi Joyce at his school in South India.
And we might as well have been at the Puck Building in New York or something. I mean, there was over 100 Westerners, and there wasn't a single Indian, Sandeep. I mean, we were looking around and saying, like, well, where are the Indians?
But things are starting to change. The Indian government is filming hundreds of yoga poses so no one tries to patent them. People are practicing yoga at call centers and other workplaces.
We saw in large cities like Mumbai, for example, that there are power yoga studios cropping up because Madonna does yoga. It has nothing to do with India. Whereas if you go to a power yoga studio here in the U.S., you know, they'll say what you're doing is a 5,000-year-old ancient practice.
I hear they come to your homes now in India to teach you yoga. Private lessons. And it's the real thing. They learned it from American DVDs.
Back to neutral.
Sandeep Roy is the host of New America Now on KALW in San Francisco. The movie Another Year is the work of filmmaker Mike Lee. The British writer-director is known for finding resonance in stories of ordinary people living ordinary lives. Kenneth Turan has this review.
With Mike Lee, the everyday becomes extraordinary. Another Year revolves around a happily married couple named Tom and Jerry, played by Jim Broadbent and Ruth Sheen. Together, they form an island of steadiness and dependability. No one depends more on these two than their younger friend Mary, played by Leslie Manville. Mary is a little frantic from the first moments we see her, a flighty, live-wire individual who seems to have too much energy for her own good.
I'm really comfortable with where I am in my life. As you know, I've got my lovely little garden flat, I've got a good job, I've got my health, touch wood, I've got my independence, I haven't got anybody telling me what to do. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not all rosy. I have good days and bad days like everyone else, don't I? But hey!
As the year goes on, however, Mary becomes increasingly unhinged, a loose cannon that no one can control. When she gets it into her head to begin flirting with Tom and Jerry's son, Joe, the results become disastrous.
Here's Joe.
Hi, Mary.
Hello, Joe. What a surprise.
You're all right?
I'm great. How are you? Oh, continental. It's all sweaty.
I've been riding all morning.
Have you? I like your hat.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's right. Never forget to kiss your mum.
I never do.
No, you're a good boy, aren't you?
Yeah.